All right, this is the Free the Land show from It's August 26th or 7th or so. All right, I guess we'll get a little feedback because there's no good headphones here. So we have Harvey's with us from Move to Amend. Are you there, Harvey?
I'm here. Move to Amend in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
This We're is the local affiliates of the national organization. And we are seeking to do nothing less than amend the United States Constitution to say that corporations are not people and money is not speech, and thereby overturning Citizens United. It's a 2010 Supreme Court decision.
Versus the FEC.
Yeah.
Now, you've got some events coming up?
We do. September the 20th, we have Swami Beyondananda. Now, this is a guy that's had a decades-long relationship with Santa Cruz. He's living in Santa Rosa now. His name is Steve Berman.
Uh-huh.
And he has graciously decided to come and do a benefit at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on September the 20th. So we are preparing by putting out ads in the newspapers, and we handed out almost 3,000 small flyers. And you're going to see, now this is August 27th, so now between now and September the 20th, you're going to see the magnificent Swami, his face, all over the newspapers, all over flyers, all over handouts. So if you're listening to this prior to that, let me tell you that amending the Constitution can be fun.
And there you go.
And to prove the point, we have Swami Beyondananda. So what I'm going to do is read you the back of the handout.
Okay.
Which says, from high in the forbidden mountains of the Himalayas comes the magnificent Swami Beyondananda, who will share with the mortals of Santa Cruz the wisdom of knowing without knowledge. After exhaustively studying the ancient scrolls of the Ayurvedics for more than 10 minutes, the Swami will descend upon the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Ocean Street, at 612 Ocean Street, on September the 20th at 7 p.m. Come, listen, laugh, and learn the ultimate truth that corporations are not people. So, tickets are $19 in advance, and you can get them at brownpapertickets.com. That's brownpapertickets.com. They're $19 in advance. 24 at the door.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the commercial.
All right, is there anything else? He'll just be speaking, any music or anything? Or?
Well, he does two 40-minute sets. That are, you know, basically Steve and Swami is he's an entertainer, but his entertainment is sprinkled with political savvy. So if you find a copy of the Connection magazine, the August edition, there is an interview with him called Swami Speaks. And it's fun, and yet it's perspicacious, meaning it goes to the core of what he's talking about. And I encourage you to take a look at it.
It sounds like he's a bit of a comedian, too.
Well, he is a comedian. He's a humorist.
Okay.
And an educator. And he's been doing this for many, many years.
So does he traveling around the country doing the Move to Mend, or just in the state? Or?
Well, right. I don't have his itinerary. He's mm-hmm. living, right now he's living up in Santa Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my thoughts is to be able to, how shall I say it? Get him to work for other benefits for Move to Amend scattered around at least California.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a work in progress. And
so this is his debut lecture. Then this is the first lecture he's doing on it.
It's not a lecture. It's
performance.
And his, you know, just the way the little blurb that I read is filled with farcical humor,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Himalayas and the mm-hmm. Ayurvedics and
yeah.
things like that. That's the type of humor that he employs, and yet at the same time, there's still, as I said, sprinkled throughout it, some deeper meaning as to the state of what our political situation here is in the United States.
So how did you get into this?
Oh, well, I'm an activist. I worked on both the Obama campaigns, successfully, I'm happy to say. After the election in November, last November, I went on vacation for a while, and then comes January or February, I looked around for something to devote my energy to, and there's so many worthy causes out there. You know, of everything from Save the Whales to desalination to Doctors Without Borders, and all sorts of environmental groups. But when I looked at these things that I've been interested in, I found that you just have to take, right beneath the surface, you just have to take off the cover and see that corporate influence and corporate money is oftentimes, if not at the bottom of it, at least a facilitator of being able to put forward the corporate agenda, whether it's the destruction of a forest in Ecuador, or an anti-immigration stance, or trying to defund Obamacare, or any one of the other issues. You look, who's funding this? And of course, you know, the usual suspects, the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson. But in addition to those guys, which oftentimes will operate through a PAC, a super PAC, are corporate funding. You know, and how can a corporation, I say to myself, how can a corporation put unlimited amounts of money and unaccountable amounts of money, not having to even identify who it's coming from, just create some sort of front group like Citizens United and be able to put, you know, millions, if not tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into electing a legislator or a... or influencing an election.
Ballot
so
mission.
I found that, that corporate influence and is pervasive in our country and in fact in the world. The latest decision, the Citizens United decision of 2010, is really an interesting case because what happened was, if you remember back in the during the primaries prior to Obama making his run, there was a movie that a right-wing group, funded by the Koch brothers, by the way, that made a movie called Hillary, the movie, and it was a hit piece. But to be broadcast on television as a entertainment piece, it ran afoul of the some campaign laws. So Citizens United got together and brought this as a suit all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, actually five justices of the Supreme Court, all male, by the way, they said, well, wait a second now. Instead of either saying, yes, you can run this film, or no, you can't run the film, what they did is they granted corporations personhood. And by that, they gave them constitutional rights that heretofore have only been for human beings. So if a corporation is a person, here's the logic, if a corporation is a person, they are covered by all of the amendments to the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, including the First Amendment, which part of it is free speech. So if a corporation is a person, they're protected by the First Amendment, free speech, and that they can then give unlimited and unaccountable amounts of money to anybody that they please. Now, you know, during the Obama campaign, for instance, and this is just me personally, I gave him $100 and put my time and energy in. And my $100 was my voice. That was my free speech, according to Citizens United. But Sheldon Adelson gave $10 million to Newt Gingrich just before the North Carolina primary and bought airtime. And sure enough, out of nowhere comes Newt Gingrich, who wins the North Carolina primary. The fact that he didn't ultimately go on to be the candidate is another story altogether. But it does illustrate how a single person that has unlimited funds can influence something as strong as a presidential candidate in the primary.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the law...
Let me just finish up this thought. So when I decided that, okay, I need to do something radical, and when I mean by radical, you look in Webster Dictionary, it says going to the root. And here I'll quote Henry David Thoreau, who, when asked about being a radical, said, "There's lots of people hacking at the branches, but very few digging at the roots. And if I'm going to be effective, then I have to devote my energies to being radical in a sense of going to the root cause. And the root cause, as far as I'm concerned, in this particular case, is corporate personhood. That needs to be reversed. And the only way to legally and lawfully reverse a Supreme Court decision is by amending the Constitution of the United States."
Mm-hmm.
So I'll stop there, and you can say whatever you want.
Well, I mean, there is campaign limits that individuals can give to the candidate, but we're talking about these, like, you can give it to a nonprofit group, but then it gives it to a super PAC, and you the nonprofit group doesn't reveal who actually gave them the money, so it is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can give as much as you want that way. So that's one of the... I think I was looking at the Supreme Court case, and one of the things you can do is the laws could require more disclosure, but of course the Republicans don't want that because it's their cause that's being helped by this because they represent the wealthiest.
That's true. You know, and it would take legislation. Mm-hmm. As soon as Citizens United said there was a bill in Congress to require transparency as to who gives money to who,
mm-hmm.
and it was defeated. It never passed Congress. Never got to the president's desk.
Because that would, you know, pass the Supreme Court constitutional muster. The problem with...
Right, we don't know that.
Well, they were saying that in the case. You could... Disclaimers. They were also... Citizens United were also didn't want to do the disclaimer, and they didn't want to disclose, but they lost those elements of the case because there is no free speech thing there. But, you know, I'm kind of persuaded... Say I'm holding up a protest sign. I have a First Amendment right, and you join me, and 20 other people join me. I mean, we don't lose our First Amendment right because we're part of a collective. We still have that, and a corporation is a form of a collective. So in a sense, they still do have, since they are people involved, they still do have a First Amendment right as a collective. Just calling it a person is just kind of a fiction.
Let me interrupt you here.
Okay.
Each of the individuals that you just mentioned, be it the 20 people that are doing signs, or a collection of people that are shareholders or on the board of directors, each one of those people has constitutional rights. We're not talking about getting rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even talking about getting rid of the rights that are granted by a particular state to the entity called a corporation, their charter. It's in their charter.
Mm-hmm.
Those rights, which include things like limited liability and, you know, all the protections that you get from either an S corporation or a regular corporation, those stay in place. What I'm talking about are constitutional rights. Something that, let me give you a different example other than Citizens United. That is a situation where the CEO of, say, Exxon is called before a Senate committee. And he, as an individual, not as the CEO of the company, can take the Fifth Amendment and say, "I refuse to answer on the grounds that I might tend to incriminate."
Yeah.
Now, if he's called upon to answer as a corporate CEO, he then has the same ability to say, "I'm sorry, but I'm not going to answer your question directed at Exxon Corporation because of the Fifth Amendment."
Right. Well,
this is only one. There's 27 amendments to the Constitution.
Right, but hold on. That one, corporations don't have. They don't have the right not to incriminate themselves because that only applies to an individual. But to contract and this free speech stuff has been a rule that they do have those rights. But
well,
not anything
I,
that makes...
I dispute that. Being a person, granted that corporations are people, they are protected by all of the amendments to the Constitution.
Right, there's still some undecided. It's through the 14th Amendment. There's still some undecided how far it goes. And I just specifically read, although I haven't done detail on this, that the right to not incriminate is not included in those rights for a corporation. And my feeling is on the other side, you know, they can be treated like a criminal too, if they, you know, because corporations are always killing people, right? I mean, commonly.
Well, I don't know. You know, let's talk about what a corporation is. A corporation is a holder that has pages in it and a corporate seal, and there's words on those pages. It is not a human entity. It is not an alive thing. It doesn't die. It cannot be sent to jail. So you have to indict and look for malfeasance within the governing of it. The corporation itself is immune.
Well, sort of. I mean, it says they can be treated as criminals, too. So my feeling is you could make laws that just ban them from doing business in your state if they're convicted of manslaughter or something like that. Because the CEOs never go to jail on these situations, like the oil spill in the Gulf. You know, that killed a bunch of people. That could have been ruled like a corporate manslaughter, and then you could just ban the corporate. I mean, this approach hasn't been tried yet. I mean, you could take the given that if they're a person, then let's start treating them like a person, and if they're guilty of a crime, let's cut off their ability to business.
Well, that's yet to happen.
I know that's, but no one's really approached it, and they'll probably win on those because again, they have so much influence that they can just buy their way through politicians and probably judges as well.
Well, yes. I mean, who, what, why, where, when is very difficult to. Mm-hmm. To find if everything is opaque, where the deep throat said, follow the money, and mm-hmm. that if you apply that to virtually anything, you're gonna find people that are culpable.
Yeah, well then, when they get the directors or whatever, and it's the jury likes, they were just trying to help the corporation, so it really wasn't a selfish thing. So then they get off easy too. I mean, it's like you can't really tag a corporation for the crimes the way the individuals get tagged.
That's true.
So they do have a huge advantage.
But you could take their corporate book and lock it up in jail.
Yeah, well, you could kill them. You could give them the death penalty, revoke their charter.
Well, there is attempts going on now in Delaware against several corporations that groups are seeking to have their charter revoked.
Absolutely.
For malfeasance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice word for really screwing up.
But it's the criminal behavior. I mean, there's an incentive to do it because there's money to be made. And they just don't, they're not just seen as guilty the way, because people don't see them as a person. Like you say, when you talk to people, a lot of people go, well, they're not really a person. Even though the Supreme Court, puts them in that category for some issues. Because, once again, they are just a group of people. You can't just say, Occupy can't have freedom of speech because it's a bunch of people. I mean, Occupy was treated as a person by the city here. We got, public nuisance, and we were being sued.
And who's being sued?
Yeah, that was the problem.
because everybody, it reminds me of the military, that everybody was just following orders.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Don't forget, the prime, if not sole, function of a corporation is to maximize profit. Now, I don't want to demonize all corporations, because there are corporations that have done some very, very beneficial things.
Uh-huh, that's
and
true.
In fact, given the paralysis of Congress, some of the corporations have taken the lead in environmental. What comes to mind is, believe it or not, Starbucks. Starbucks uh-huh. decided that they're going to buy only free trade coffee, and which is an increase in revenue for the growers.
Yep.
So the trick, in my mind, is not to shut off the spigot of capital. It's to direct the hose as to where the products of capitalism are put into effect. And as I've just mentioned, there are many cases that you and I could cite where corporate ethics, where corporate desires to have a positive impact on the world is brought to fruition by the creativity of entrepreneurs that say, I can mm-hmm. do both. I could be a guardian of the environment and make money doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has to go, their brand is actually their weakness. You can go after their reputation. For like Starbucks, probably the majority of the people that buy Starbucks are people like in Santa Cruz that are somewhat liberal, that like the idea that it's free trade coffee. It actually adds to their cachet or whatever. So it does make business sense. I mean, if we use that kind of those techniques to hold them accountable, whereas it, like a corporation that no one sees, you know, like a mining corporation, doesn't really deal with the public directly in retail. They're out there, you know, killing people in other countries and stuff just to get cheaper ore or oil.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Thomas Jefferson said, "The price of liberty is eternal vigilance."
That's right.
Well, and I need to sleep sometimes, so you better get on the
station. we do this station 24/7, but a lot of it's just recorded. We've automated the revolution here.
Uh-huh. Right, the revolution will not be automated.
I like it. When the FCC came here, they came with warrants for the record players and the equipment. that's somebody. Because, you know, another word for corporatism, according to Mussolini, is fascism. When business, you know, takes over government and decides how it's being run, that's fascism. And eventually, you know, people get crushed because they have no soul. They don't really care about people. It's all about the bottom line and their shareholders.
It's an interesting phenomenon. Corporate fascism, putting those two words together, mm-hmm. it really creates a metaphor, if you will. I certainly have thought about it in those terms, but I don't want to be someone that slings words around that to be able to find something that sticks to the wall. If it fits, and if nothing else, the term corporate fascism should provoke some thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is capitalism? What does, going back to Adam Smith, what are the critiques that Marxist ideology had of capitalism? Does it apply now? You know, some do, some do, some, mm-hmm. some don't.
Well, China's
but I'll
practicing
tell you,
it.
I'll tell you this, you know, some of this thought is, I have given it some thought, and that is, it is the nature of laissez-faire capitalism to have greater and greater wealth in fewer and fewer hands.
Exactly.
You know, and what the ultimate product of that is a combination of state and big business.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes to mind is Nazism and the Krupp Works and
yep.
Ford.
Yep.
And that is the antithesis of democracy, the way we know it.
Exactly. Well, you're seeing it with the campaign you're working on. I mean, it's like fewer and fewer voices matter to the candidates because it's coming in these big, huge chunks of millions. Your $100 doesn't mean shit to them.
That's right.
So you know, they don't care what you. I mean, look at Obama. I mean, he's like a Republican platform from like the 70s. You know, and he's supposed to be a Democrat. You know, with his offshore drilling, nuclear power. You know, merit pay for teachers. Those are all Republican issues, and the Republican Party has gone completely Nazi. You know, everything swung so far to the right.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that.
Because you need signatures.
Let me tell you why. Because there's a practical reason to it, although I certainly have opinions, as you mm-hmm. might notice. I have to stay laser-like focused on the fact that corporations are not people and money is not speech. I recently attended, you know, a couple of months ago, I was asked to speak at the Freedom Forum here in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
And the Freedom Forum itself is open to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I set up a table, and they give me 2 minutes to be able to introduce who I am and what I'm doing. And opposite me is another table. And there at the other table are people that are concerned about chemtrails. And over there are people that want to dump the Federal Reserve. And up the road over there, just right behind those chairs, is a woman with a table that is against vaccinations. So what I found was this panoply of different groups that go everything from traditional right-wing stuff to evangelical mm-hmm. to whack jobs, you know, mm-hmm. wacko jobs. And I need to be able to speak to these people. If I come out for or against vaccinations, I've lost some people. If I come
That's
out
right.
for or against the Federal Reserve, I've lost some people. So what I did when I got up and spoke is I said, how many people here believe in the U.S. Constitution? Every person in the room raised their hand. every person. And so I created common ground where I could speak with people from the left, from the right, from the middle, from every place in the political spectrum. Because when you look at particularly libertarian ideology, so it sort of meets at the back of the circle with progressive thought, especially in cases of individual rights. You know, so the suppression of individual rights by multimillionaires and multibillionaires in drowning out my $100 and their $50 and their $200, by drowning them out, it flies in the face of what they stand for, both left and right, which is individual rights that we have a democracy and that you have a one man, one vote.
Well, you won't get the anarchists because they don't really, someone want to, you know, just rip up the Constitution, but they are completely opposed to capitalist corporations, so you still have some common ground there. But unfortunately, you know, they probably don't vote either, so they won't be signing your petition. So you're also going to be working on a petition here very shortly, beginning in November?
Well, yes.
Why don't you tell us about that?
But I will. But speaking of anarchists, trying to get anarchists night is a oxymoron.
I call it anarchism because it's, well, they're not really even practicing proper anarchism either. The blocking wasn't part of the old anarchism. It's essentially a leader in reverse or a ruler in reverse. One person can, you know, control everyone else
by being loud or spending a lot of money.
There's that too. The people that are loud at the meetings, but just by they have the blocking thing because they believe in consent. The consensus form of anarchism, I call it authoritarian anarchism. One person can block everyone else's intention because he just didn't like or she didn't like it or whatever. So that causes then they'll split off and form a group that person's not a part of, and if they want to do what they want to do. And so I saw it at Occupy. It just becomes a smaller and smaller and smaller groups
that are interested primarily in profit.
Yeah, Occupy was all about, well, that's the anarchistic consensus process there, and it's, you know, it just took forever, and they work at the Sub Rosa, they do a very good job with it because they're kind of a monoculture. They all, like the Quakers, use consensus too. They're all very similar in their worldview, so it's much easier to come to agreement. Occupy was people walking in from all different points of view, and there was very little consensus there.
Yeah.
And so nothing really happened other than, you know, camping in the park.
Well, I'll tell you something. Here are two loose organizations. One is Occupy. The other one is the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
And in recent history, in the last few years, what I admire about the Tea Party from a tactical viewpoint is that after their meetings, they didn't go home and each one work on their own agenda if there was nothing on television. What they did was they went to city council meetings. They ran for the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
They ran for a planning commission. And by building this type of infrastructure, they were successful in taking over the Republican Party at the state level in many states.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't see an inch of that. Not an inch of that in Occupy. I was part of Occupy Santa Cruz. I was part of Occupy Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, what am I doing here, wasting my life?
Well, that's part of anarchism. They don't believe in dealing with the government like that. I mean, back in the 60s, the left was, you know, Tom Hayden became, you know, a senator or a congressman or something. I do think that's necessary. You got to push outside the system and within the system. And I think that's partly why the right has been winning. And also because, they can throw so much money at the candidates, they pretty much have bought our government.
Well, that's true, and you know, and a major financier of the Tea Party was the Club for Growth, which was the Koch brothers.
Yeah, they got a bunch of money behind them too. It isn't just a bunch of town hall meeting people; it's them plus a bunch of money. But we could do this. We could do something similar. It's just if we have good ideas and get them out there, you know.
Well, okay.
And we're willing to go for office. I mean, we said it would take back Santa Cruz in this town. They've taken over a seat on the city council. But we also have Micah Posner from the People Power. So there is some people still on the left that are... and they've come together on a porta-potty, actually. They're going to... If they spend
they
60...
come together on a porta-potty?
Yeah, there's going to be a 24-hour porta-potty. Well, I mean...
Well, I don't know how I missed that in the newspaper.
Well, that's big news on Free the Land, because there is no 24-hour toilet in this town if you're poor. And you know, because the merchants are complaining about, you know, shit on their doorstep. So Pamela Constock had to grab it. It was actually Micah's idea to begin with, because we've been talking about it with them and stuff. It just makes sense because there's somebody has to clean up that poop anyway. So even if there is some vandalism, that's what they're saying. There's going to be a vandalism. They're not going to put a guard on it, I noticed. But Occupy and Peace Camp the year before also provided 24-hour toilets, and there was no vandalism there because there were people sleeping by to protect them.
Yeah.
But it's funny that, you know, strange bedfellows. We'll see. It cost them $16,000. You know, a porta potty only cost $700. I looked it up on the internet. But, you know, they have to give some extra money to all their friends in order to get anything done in this town.
So let me ask, answer your question, tell you about it. I'll give you a little bit of background for the benefit of your listeners.
All right, this is the petition you're.
Well, let me lead up to it.
All right.
Move to Amend Santa Cruz is a local affiliate of the national organization. There's 135 affiliates scattered around the United States, quite a few in California. And what we've been in existence, we became an affiliate in early March. So really, we've only been around five, six months. And during that time, we've created a stir. We brought the issue to the attention of the public. How did we do that? Well, we brought David Cobb here, who was the national spokesperson for Move to Amend. He was also a 2004 presidential candidate for the Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
We appeared on the stage in Santa Cruz High with the Common Cause and CalPERG and Mike Kapostner, as city council person, to talk about overturning Citizens United and what that means, and is there a common front between us? With Patrick Dwyer from the Good Times wrote a 750-word piece for us that appeared in the June 6th edition of the Good Times. The Connection magazine, which I referred to earlier, has been very supportive of what we've done. They interviewed Swami, who talks about somewhat about Move to Amend and also to the larger issue of corporate personhood. And he does it with the humorous way that I'm talking about, that I referred to. So we appeared for an hour on Steve Plesch's Voices from the Village, on community television. So in the 5 months, what we've done is diametrically opposed to what happened with Occupy, meaning we don't sit around and talk about process. We don't sit around other than making plans for being activists. And we have just accomplished an enormous amount. We've been recognized by Move On, who gave us a $1,000 grant to be able to pursue what I'm going to talk about next, which is for the 2014 election, we are going to file a notice of intention to gather signatures to put on the ballot a Santa Cruz County-wide ballot initiative that will say, quote, should the citizens of Santa Cruz County support a constitutional amendment that says corporations are not people and money is not speech? Yes or no? You know, now, what is the precedent that has been for this and where we draw inspiration and knowledge from locally has been Mendocino County, which did that this past November and won by 75% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so from a public point of view, it's a no-brainer. When I'm at a table, which is on a weekly basis, a couple of times a week in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, and I say to people, corporations are not people, they go, duh, we know that. Because it's intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
To think of corporations as being people is counterintuitive.
Right.
You know, so the level of support, and that has been illustrated in polls that have been done by Pew and Quinnipiac, has been that the recognition of corporations not being people is in the 75 to 85% category. It's just so pervasive. It's just so pervasive. When you bring it down to the level of course corporations are not people. It's even dumb to have even think about it. So we would like to do, and we'll pursue, a ballot initiative here in the county. In order to do that, we have to gather 9,157 registered voters' signatures on a petition drive. We have 6 months to do it. It starts November the 1st. We'll start November the 1st. So if any of you listeners out there in radio land, network land,
you can say that.
Think that this is an issue worthy of your attention, of your energy, and we're wanting to volunteer. We are in the formulative stages of putting together volunteers to do things like collect signatures in a very careful manner, register voters at the same time, and go to places like the farmers markets that are scattered all over the town. Mm-hmm. Go to places like movie lines waiting for Willie Nelson in front of the Civic to be able to break down Santa Cruz City and County into precincts and actually go door to door and say, hi, my name is Harvey, and I'm working with Move for Men, and we seek to overturn Citizens United by a constitutional amendment that says corporations are not people. Will you sign? Are you a registered voter? Will you sign? It's as simple and straightforward as that. But it takes it takes people power to do it. It takes a certain amount of money to do that. There's filing fees. There's, you know, printing. I mean, it just takes money. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, aside from Move On giving us $1,000, how long is that going to last, $1,000? So coming to see Swami at the Resource Center for $19 is going to provide us with enough money to not run the whole campaign, but enough money to get started to collect signatures. So 7 o'clock, September the 20th, the Friday evening, Resource Center for Nonviolence. If you're interested, if you'd like to spend an evening laughing your rear end off because this guy is funny, and yet do something that's progressive, or shall I say, that crosses both progressive and conservative lines, come to see the Swami. I promise you a fun-filled evening. Tickets are inexpensive, and they're at brownpapertickets.com. One more time, brownpapertickets.com. And that includes you, Free. Get yourself over there.
Now, you're interesting. You said it crosses conservative lines. I do believe it probably that, like, say, that at the Tea Party level, or, you know, individual conservatives are opposed to the corporations having the ability to just throw money at candidates as well, even though it's usually their candidates that get the money.
Well, you know, I don't know if being a member of the Tea Party automatically puts you in as eligible for the loony bin. I think that there are, like in every other collection of people, there are people that are able to see through or see with and come to conclusions that, yes, corporations, and if you look at Tea Party writings, you'll find that corporations are second only to the government.
Yeah.
In terms of being hateful.
You know, they don't like it because there's another bureaucracy they don't like.
Yeah, and that's out of their control. That in certain cases dominates their lives. You know, if a mining company, using your example, screws up the water that's coming into your house, you're going to be pissed.
That's another issue that they you can split. I'm thinking of divide and conquer, because usually the corporate right will try and get the Tea Party types together with them in order to get majorities to win. But there's issues you can split them on, and the environment and this kind of thing are the same, those kinds of issues. So I think they should be pursued.
Oh, yes. And, you know, one of the heartening things is the deep split in the Republican Party right now. Between what they call traditional Republicans, I won't even think that they're moderates any longer, but they're mounting, the right wing is mounting a campaign against, a primary campaign against Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham! For God's sakes, Lindsey Graham gets like 99.99% on the Freedom Index when it comes to being how conservative is. To mount a campaign against Orrin Hatch from you because he's not far right enough. I mean, this might be the death keel of the Republican Party. You know, like the Whigs.
Yeah, I'm all for that, because, I mean, that's, you know, anarchism is that for the left. Everybody, I saw it just dribble down to hardly any people. You know, it's just run by Huff now locally. Everybody else just quit coming because they got divided away because people just don't agree, you know, if you can. But we want to focus on the other side getting split up, because that's what weakens you, is when you're split up.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm an observer mm-hmm. when it comes to that, because, again, I'm focused. I'm focused, focused, focused. The group that I work with is focused on this issue and not getting off into any other issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, like you said, but well, you're thinking like a politician now. They don't want to split people off. So usually they do that by being as bland as possible and sounding like they're for everything. But you're doing it just by focusing on an issue that everyone agrees with for the most part.
Yeah, and I don't see myself as being like a politician in that respect. Politicians, yes, oftentimes will say what they think they want you to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the other hand, they are full of vitriolicness. Attacking the other side.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not attacking anybody.
Well, the corporations. So, you're attacking the corporations. Come on.
Well, I'm attacking, yes, but I'm attacking, okay, here's an interesting point. I am not attacking anybody. I'm attacking a fictitious entity.
Right.
Yeah.
A chartered entity. So this isn't the first time. You also worked on the campaign to make it a nuclear-free zone, Santa Cruz, right?
No.
Oh, I thought you said you did.
No, I didn't. But I did cut my teeth way back in 1980 at Diablo Canyon. You know, 500-600 of us got arrested climbing the fences at Diablo
Uh-oh.
Canyon.
You were occupied.
Well, yes, before there was such a word. Uh-huh. Well, there was a word. We did think of ourselves as occupying it. But, you know, as an interesting, in hindsight, there hasn't been a new nuclear power plant built in the United States since 1978. So in one respect, the issue that we brought up about the waste issues,
uh-huh.
About the proliferation issues, about and Fukushima is
oh, yeah.
an absolutely classic example of that, has borne fruit because... there was so much opposition and so much delay and so much cost overruns and so many safety issues that the United States has not built a nuclear reactor. In fact, since then.
So the bottom line changed.
In retrospect, we won.
Yeah.
Now, Duke Power in South Carolina, I believe, canceled two plants that they had on the drawing boards, I guess maybe a month or two ago. You know, there are, and the old plants are starting to retire. So what we're looking at, and some is the demise of the nuclear industry within the United States. And some of that, believe it or not, has to do with the cheap gas that is a product of fracking.
Mm-hmm.
So without getting into that issue, the pros
you're
the
losing
pros
your laser
cons,
focus on
but,
that one.
But I'm just, you know, I'm an observer.
Uh-huh.
I watch what's going on. And because I'm an old fart, I have the perspective of being able to see how things have evolved.
Right.
Now, some of them I like and some of them I don't like.
Yeah.
But I look at a lot of them.
Did you say you got arrested during that occupation?
Yes.
And what was the result of that? Probation?
No. They just let us all go after a couple of days.
Oh, okay.
You know, one thing to do is 600
it's hard to process 600 people through the courts.
Well, they did, you know, and
oh, you went through the courts?
And the cases were dismissed. It was handled, a lot was handled by our legal team.
Uh-huh.
But now there was a situation where we also worked by consensus, but it was at the affinity group level.
Well,
so
what does that mean?
Yeah, you know, and I guess it was a
you
modified...
A smaller group, you mean?
Yes.
Affinity is a smaller subset of the 600?
Yes.
Okay.
And in order for us to participate in the occupation... We had to join an affinity group, go through nonviolent training, and be able to have our support system. We had as many people being support, following buses around, providing legal stuff, and all sorts of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it created such a hassle for PG&E that they decided that it's not going to happen anymore. They're going to go into their credit. They started giving rebates for people that wanted to update their houses from an insulation point of view. They took on solar power. They started building geothermal plants up in around Calistoga. You know, they really got bitten
yeah.
by Diablo Canyon.
Right, once again, they're a retail. They're selling to people, so they need to improve their image because you were tearing their image down, really. You were destroying their brand name.
And destroyed the economic feasibility of nuclear power in the United States.
Yeah, that's you hit them. It's all about the money. You make it more expensive, or you cut off their supply of money. That's a strategic attack against a political opponent. So when you said they got fed up, did you go to a bunch of these, or just Diablo Canyon, or what's the history on that?
I was arrested in 1980, and then in 1981 I was part of a. I don't know if you've been how long you've been around Santa Cruz, but there used to be a collective up on UCSD campus called the Whole Earth, which was the restaurant up there. We did a restaurant up there.
Uh-huh.
So in 1981, we provided a field kitchen for the third occupation of Diablo Canyon. We were not going away.
It's kind of like Food Lab Bombs, huh?
It was, yeah.
Around the same time.
It was a precursor to that, and it was local.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we set up a huge field kitchen. There was an interesting story that I'll relate to you.
Okay.
This guy comes by. He says, this is the San Luis Obispo. He says, I'm one of the local fishermen. I got about a half a ton of shrimp. Do you want it? I go, well, yeah, we want it. So we dug a hole and put some coals into the hole and a 55-gallon drum and boiled the shrimp and cut up a whole bunch of vegetables. And that evening, we had shrimp and rice and vegetables for 2,000 people.
Wow.
That.
So that was your 600 plus the support group of 1,400?
No, this was the second occupation.
So you had 2,000 total in the second one?
2,000 total in the second one. Now, not all of them were occupiers.
Okay.
There were support people. There was people that worked the kitchens, you know, and there was a fisherman guy that just dropped in with half a ton of shrimp.
So how did that one go?
It went well. It added another nail in the coffin of nuclear power. Now, one of the biggest nails that we did not have direct input into, but up in Washington at the Hanford Reservation, there is a complex of four nuclear reactors. Two of them, for weapons work, nuclear weapons work.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to build two more reactors at that reservation. Well, the two reactors went belly up in terms of bankruptcy. The ones that were on the drawing board went belly up. Mm-hmm. Since that time, the bond market said never again.
Like you were saying, it just, there's no funding for it anymore, so they can't build them.
Well, unless the government steps in, which they have been doing.
They've been talking about it because Obama gets a lot of money from nuclear power in Illinois for all his campaigns there.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. Even my thinking on nuclear power has undergone somewhat a metamorphosis because there's a larger picture here.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'll just comment on this. And say that Obama has been looking at it as all of the above. He wants wind, he wants solar, he wants oil, he wants coal, he wants them all because there is an energy crisis, you know, in terms of the availability of energy. Now, to his credit, he put $15 billion a year into research and development for 10 years for what we'll call alternative energies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that failed automobile plant up in Fremont that everybody was pointing at.
Oh, he came out to visit or something?
Yeah, he came out to visit, and they went belly up because the Chinese were selling at below cost.
There's capitalism.
There's capitalism. So the research and development that went into biomass, that went into geothermal, that went into wind, that went into solar, all these alternative energies have already reached a place of being economically competitive with oil. It has priced coal and nuclear out of the market. So he appoints, Jackson, first head of the EPA, who said, okay, coal plants, there's a lot of them in the United States, you need scrubbers. Any new plant that comes online needs scrubbers.
That costs too much, yeah.
It costs too much. So they're closing coal plants because the coal plants have either to become upgraded so that they no longer emit the noxious fumes, and that there's no longer mercury and arsenic in the slag, and they can't afford to do it.
Other countries have done that, though, right? That's why
some have.
Yeah, some have.
Some have.
And we have a lot of coal too.
That's
That's one of our natural resources.
But coal and oil are not going to go away overnight.
Right.
You know, but what we need is regulation at the federal level, because the only countervailing force there is to offset laissez-faire capitalism, and by laissez-faire capitalism, we've seen what has happened in our own history, that the concentration of power in fewer and fewer and fewer hands brought us the robber barons of the 1890s and the early 1900s, where they owned everything, from the coal in the ground to the pump where you pump the oil. You know, all the transportation, all the manufacturing, all the processing was owned by Standard Oil.
So they can monopolize it.
Well, they did, but then came the antitrust laws, and they said, well, wait a second, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the point is that it is only governmental regulation through our democratic process that's going to say, no, you can't hire 10-year-olds and put them in a factory for 11 hours a day.
Because it used to be, the labor used to be the countervailing power against the corporations and the wealthy.
And not anymore, because labor at best is national and capital is global.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the globalization. They just moved the jobs elsewhere, so that you have a strike, it doesn't mean anything. Your job's going away anyway.
Labor is a shadow of what it was in the 40s and the 50s.
It's mostly just in government where labor is still strong.
Yeah, it's not dead, but it's on life support.
Mm-hmm. That was another thing in Occupy. They were like, labor wants to join up with us, and they were saying no. And I'm going, what the hell? I mean, it's all students and labor were the traditional ways that revolutions, you know, come from.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate. What are you going to do?
Well, it's a new age we're living in. I mean, and that's not a hippie slang term.
It's always a change. There's nothing. The only thing permanent is change. There's always going to be. So you have to change your tactics and your strategies as well to adapt to it.
And there's new technology.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you've studied economics, you'll find, and you'll go back to a guy named Malthus. And Malthus, as an economist, he wrote, I guess, in the late 1800s. He said, he looked around and he said, you know what? There's only so much land on this planet.
We're going to have overpopulation.
and no, that's not what he said. He says that, He says that the growth of the ability for the land to produce is arithmetically, meaning that you go and you start another field over here and you start another one, and 1 and 1 makes 2, and 1 and 1 and 1 makes 3. But population is geometric. Yep. So he foresaw disaster. What he did not see was the Green Revolution.
Mm.
What he did not see was the Industrial Revolution.
It's the technology that makes it possible.
So as much as you and I get pissed off at our iPhones, if we're going to look for a saving grace, it's going to have to come from technology, in my opinion.
I'm right there, too. I mean, that's one of the things that a lot of these economic theorists overlook is the technology. And actually, war is one of the things that propels technology, because people are willing to go for change if it means, you know, not getting annihilated. Whereas in capitalist markets, they don't like technology. Like the oil companies, they try and stop, you know, solar and other things because it's going to hurt their profits. So they do everything they can to stop technological advance.
Except in their own field.
Except in their own field, of course, right. And that's like you said, in that point you need government regulation. But when they're, you know, funding the governments, they're running the governments too. So you're not going to get that government watching all that closely.
That's correct. I mean, who do you think writes the bills that get through Congress?
Mm-hmm.
And again, in my opinion, if it wasn't for a Democratic Senate and a Democrat in the White House, we'd be in deep, deep, deep trouble. I mean, have you seen the Ryan budget?
I don't follow it too closely or anything.
Okay.
I'm not up on the news. What were you going to say about it?
Well, you know, Paul Ryan, freshman senator, all of a sudden becomes the guru of what I'll call objectivism. And if you've read Ayn Rand, you know all about objectivism. It's a form where you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps and you get governments out of the way.
Yada, yada, yada.
And that any form of subsidy, any form of where the government helps out, and I'm talking not only about food stamps, or I'm talking about Social Security, I'm talking about Medicare, I'm talking about any sort of government assistance is it puts you in the category of what Mitt Romney called takers. We're takers. They're takers. Anybody that that has enough millions is an entrepreneur and a wonderful
job creator,
a job creator. You know, so when you reduce it to that level, well, fortunately, the American people saw through it, and they said, "Well, who is this guy?" We'll see what happens. You know, the Republicans are only a pretty face and a good haircut and a very glib personality away from taking over the presidency of the United States.
They'll probably take it again next time. The voters go back and forth. They don't have a good candidate as a problem right now.
That's right, they don't. I mean, have you seen Rubio? Have you seen Ted Cruz?
No, I don't.
Have you seen Paul Ryan?
Listen,
you know, you're going to have to stop following all this. You can't just sit back in your radio station.
I like to go for the historical perspective, see what worked in the past and not get confused by what's going on, the smoke and mirrors they're pulling on us recently. I was just looking at the radiation coming over from Fukushima. You know, even though you stopped it in America, you know, it's going to be parked off our coast here for a long time to come.
Because half a million years is not that long.
Well, yeah, because it's not dispersing all that much. It's going to be off the coast of California and Baja. You know, it takes a few years to get it. I guess it's going to be here in a year or something, and it's just going to sit there, you know. I mean, at least Chernobyl, you know, was inland and, you know, it didn't affect us at all. But the Fukushima, we should be suing Japan for this, you know. Or they should have to go clean it up.
Well, that's just it. They can't clean it up.
I know. It's too big.
They can't get close to it because it's so highly radioactive. You can't send anybody in there.
And it's going to be radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years. It's like you're going to have to go around. It's a huge chunk of the ocean, too. I watched a graphic on the internet. It's big. And it's not dispersing quite that fast. So it's horrible. I mean, I'm glad I don't eat seafood. I guess I have to stay away from seaweed, too. And then eventually it'll disperse to all the oceans. So
nobody gets out of here alive.
That's right. That's right. Well, yeah, and then the global warming, it's like, that's really going to be a disaster.
So you know, I'm going to come back and not get too far off track and say, our conversation over the last 20 minutes or so
had nothing to do with what you're working on right now. but I like to get the historical perspective.
No, it's not at all what I want to say. What I want to say is that our conversation illustrates the fact that underneath all of the issues that we talk about, we find corporate money.
That's right.
And corporate money and corporations have been given carte blanche by five men on the Supreme Court that says you could spend as much money as you want and you don't have to tell anybody who it is that's giving the money. And that is because you being the corporation, are being considered as a person. And therefore, you're protected by all of the amendments to the Constitution, including the one of free speech. And that's what Citizens United was based upon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so,
well, this is also an independent group. I mean, you can't give it to the candidate, but you can give it to an independent group, and then they can do whatever they want for or against the candidate. Another thing is the candidate shouldn't be able to know who gave the money either. I mean, there could be laws against that.
I don't know about that.
You would think.
I don't know about that. But if you're looking for an issue to work on, that'll deal with all of the other issues that you have concerns on, this is the issue to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Move to amend Santa Cruz. You're going to see a lot of us.
Now, if somebody wanted to start another, because we also get a lot of, you know, national listeners here, if somebody wanted to start one in their community, how did you go about starting it?
Well, movetoamend.org is the national organization. They're based up in Eureka. Is the national organization. On their website, movetoamend.org, you'll find a list of all of the affiliates. Find one that's near you and say, hey, Swami told me to come and join you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 'cause this is the issue right now. If we don't deal with corporate personhood now at the level of a constitutional amendment, then we've already seen what has happened.
Well, you raised the issue. Constitutional amendment is very difficult to, and you're not even really trying that with your current election. You're just raising the issue.
Well, we can't. I mean, can people here in Santa Cruz amend the Constitution by themselves?
A state vote could. I mean, you could get on the state ballot.
Well, California has already signed on calling for a constitutional amendment to address this issue. 16 states have signed on, including California.
So we just need 3/4 of them. So we're,
We need 38 states.
38. So we're 38. Not quite halfway there yet.
No, we're about a third of the way there yet. But heck, I've only been working on this for 5 months.
How long has this been? How long has MOVE to BEND been out? I mean, you've been doing it 5 months, but how long is the whole process?
About 3 years or so.
3 years, okay.
Yeah, and it started by a couple of people in Eureka that said, hey, we need to address this issue. And here's what their thought. And it has caught on because it is so intuitive with people here. Corporations are not people. They go, of course they're not. Therefore, they give some money. They go to events. They sign petitions. They do what is legal and lawful to be able to overturn a Supreme Court decision.
I always recommend that because there's still a wide variety of legal techniques you can use to put pressure on the corporations and the wealthy. This doesn't really stop some, you know, like Bill Gates being able to give a bunch of money to somebody or one of these. I guess they give it to a nonprofit 501c and then that gives it to the PAC group or whatever. It's like, you know, there's a bunch of shell.
They don't even have to go through that any longer.
They can't give it directly, but they have to use something independent is the feeling. Because if you give it to the candidate, there's a perception of corruption.
nobody knows about it.
That's what they used to do. But now they've got this other way of doing it.
Suitcases full of $100 bills work really well.
That's right. Well, now they got a legal way to do it. They found a legal way, so it can't be stopped. So you have to change a really hard law to change in order to stop it.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. Well, I need to move along. I will thank you for the interview.
Yeah, it was a good one. And thanks for being on.
All right. And thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. This has been Free the Land for August 27, 2013.